This is We Teach Languages, a podcast about language teaching from the diverse perspectives of real teachers. I'm Stacey Margarita Johnson, and today on episode 13, I get to chat with Noah Geisel. Noah was ACTFL's 2013 Language Teacher of the Year and is a consultant on educational technology. I met Noah last year at the AATSP conference. That's the American Association of Teachers of Spanish and Portuguese. He's a really impressive speaker, and I think you are going to love this conversation. So without further ado, here's Noah Geisel. How are you doing this morning, Noah?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Stacey.
It's my pleasure. So you were Teacher of the Year.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed with that. Will you tell me a little bit about what that process was like, how it happened, how you became ACTFL's Teacher of the Year? What year was it?
2013. And besides my wife saying yes when I proposed, it's definitely the coolest thing that's ever happened. And it starts at the state level with your State Language Teacher Association, which you should all be members of. An amazing woman, Elise in Oklahoma, told me the story that when she was a first year teacher, I think she said it was in the 70s, and that she went to her Oklahoma Foreign Language Teacher Association conference for the first time. And, you know, the guy doing registration said, "Welcome, are you excited to be here?" She said, "Yeah, are you a member of the organization?" She said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, are you a professional teacher?" She said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Well, then you should be professional teachers are members of their professional organizations." And I thought that was really one of the best stories I've ever heard, and really just drove home for me why it's so important to be a member of our organizations that, you know, are our voices. And so, you know, hopefully you already are a member right now, Googling your organization's address to go ahead and sign up as a member. And, you know, it started with just going to the CCFLT, the Congress of Foreign Language Teachers conferences, and, you know, learning from others, and then started presenting myself when I thought I had things to share that people might like. And then was encouraged by another former language teacher, Tony Tyson, to put my name in the hat. And that's some kind of the first step, is getting over your own imposter syndrome. Most of our Teachers of the Year, you know, the secret people don't know is what you self-nominate, because it's a lot of work. It's kind of like national board certification, where, you know, you wouldn't wish that upon someone. Someone has to be, you know, really want to take it on. There's a portfolio component, letters from other people, you know, video of yourself. And so, you know, it's a lot of work that you have to be willing to take on, but, you know, have the audacity that if you think you're doing stuff that's worth, you know, being recognized, that you put your name in the hat. And if you don't get it this year, put it in again next year. Wait 3 years and put it in again. And so you become your state level Teacher of the Year. Then you go represent your state at your regional conference. In my case, Southwest Colt. In your case, it would be SCOLT and out of Tennessee. And so, you know, at that point, you're kind of entering into a competition, if you will, with the caveat that there are no losers in that competition, right? Everyone there is awesome. And the regional organization has this amazing opportunity to select someone who's going to be the most awesome representative for the region at the ACTFL Teacher of the Year competition. Because at that point, we've moved on from just patting you on the back and saying, "You're amazing, great job." And we're really looking for a teacher who's going to be the spokesperson, if you will, for the language profession for a year. And really, you know, that at the end of the day is what I learned is the most important part of the Teacher of the Year program. And that's being an advocate for your colleagues, that's being an advocate for the study of language and culture, and really being willing to, at every opportunity, make sure that everyone knows you're a language teacher, you're not an elective, and they need to value it, because it's how we change the world.
That's amazing. That's inspiring, actually. I hope people listening are looking up how to self-nominate for Teacher of the Year right now from their state level.
Yeah, the next Teacher of the Year is at your conference right now. You know what I mean? And so, you know, when people are at their fall conference in August, September, October, if they're at their spring conference, you know, if you're looking around the room, you know, and you don't see who the next Teacher of the Year is, it's probably because, you know, you're not staying in front of a mirror. And so, you know, have the audacity to believe in yourself and go for it.
So what was your experience during your actual year of glory?
Yeah, you know, and it was definitely an opportunity to go to the different regional conferences. You know, there's a pre-conference meeting at most of these, where you have people at the state level who are state delegates who are advocating it at the state level. And right now the hot topic is CLEBI literacy. And so being able to go to these different kind of silos, if you will, of regional conferences and pick up little tidbits of just what people are doing and taking that to the next conference, bring it back to my own state, sharing it with anybody who listen is really a neat thing, because we are all so busy and get so many emails and there's so many opportunities to learn, you know, that sometimes the best stuff just happens from folks who are connectors sharing stuff in conversations. And so that was probably one of the bigger things. You know, that we got to participate in the JNCL Advocacy Day in Washington, D.C. And so we got to meet with senators, representatives, the Secretary of Education. And, you know, that's just really important building for the profession. So while nothing changed that day, meeting with Secretary Duncan, through that meeting, you know, ACFL and Marty Abbott came in contact with other folks, you know, who are change makers within that organization, who now are bought in and they're showing up at state language conferences, they're showing up at regional conferences, they, you know, are giving our advocates at the state and regional level their cell phone numbers and saying, let me know how I can help. And so I think there's definitely a very long game. And for me, beyond just the honor of being able to, you know, have that, of being able to be the representative for my colleagues, being kind of just privy to getting to pull the curtain back and peek behind it and see, you know, a curtain that previous to that I didn't know existed, and all of a sudden I got a peek behind it, was really empowering and inspiring.
So tell us a little bit about what you're excited most about right now in your work.
Yeah, I mean, it's specific to the language front. I'm really excited about culture. You know, it's really, there's a just tangible shift that's in the air, and you can smell it, taste it, hear it at every conference. That, you know, when I was growing up in middle school, high school, and even college, culture was, you know, one half of a page in the textbook per chapter, where, you know, the textbook publisher wants me to know that there was a guy my parents' age who played the drums named Tito out of Puerto Rico, and that's the culture for that unit. And I think there's this real shift now in practice where people are saying, you know what, culture is not one half a page per chapter. Culture is embedded in what we do. That for most of us who are teaching a language that is our second language, and even for those of us where it's the first language, but in English was the second language, what got us to fall in love with the language oftentimes was the culture. And so, you know, when we go beyond just the way we were taught to the way we want to teach and the way we want our students to learn, I think that culture is just the easy, low-hanging fruit, because you don't have to convince yourself. You know from your own experience that's what got you to fall in love with Spanish, French, Mandarin, Arabic, you know, Turkish, you name it. And, you know, when we then get to go back to classrooms and share that love with our students, so it's not just, I'm going to teach you about Spanish. It's that I'm going to teach you about things that you're going to enjoy, and it happens to be in the target language that I'm going to do it. And I think that for me is the thing that I'm most excited about when I get to go to schools and districts and language conferences and do workshops right now. The culture is really the cool thing. And I think why it's so enjoyable to me is because, A, it's just such an easy sell. There's nobody who's kind of saying, I'm going to push back on that, Noah. You know, that people are bought into that idea because it was their own experience. And then number two, it's because there is that this sort of, you know, wave of this coming. And so people are hungry for it. And so when I get to be in a room with awesome colleagues and share this with them, they are just so excited because they're saying, this is what I needed. But, you know, it's tough to just Google culture in the Spanish classroom and find something that works with what I need to teach next week, right? And so being able to share with folks, you know, just a million one tangible ideas, make it accessible to where they can say, okay, this was awesome on Saturday, and without that much extra work, I'm ready to go and like really change the way I do things and the way I serve my learners starting on Monday morning. And, you know, I feel confident and ready for this. And so that's something that I'm really excited about right now on the language teaching aspect.
Can you give us an example of one of those things we might be able to apply on Monday morning?
Totally. There's a quazillion of them. And, you know, it really depends on, you know, the relationships we build with our students and getting to know them. And so, you know, there's all these great resources out there from folks like Bryce Hedstrom, you know, and Ben Slavic on first day of school kind of stuff. And so surveying your students at the beginning of the year in some way, maybe it doesn't even feel like a survey. Maybe it's just making name tents where, you know, they write their name and two things that they love that have nothing to do with school, right? And then those two things, whether it's video games, whether it is dessert, whatever, those are going to be things that you can then latch onto to tie in with culture. And so, you know, if it is about just, you know, being girl crazy or boy crazy, maybe it's finding an activity that they can do for their culture assignments where they get to watch a 10-minute clip from YouTube of a dating show in the target language. And they're doing a Venn diagram comparing a dating show on MTV to a dating show on a French-speaking station if it's a French class. I think Twitter is a great resource in the Spanish world, and I think he might do it for French now. Zachary Jones has great resources on zimbombasso.com. You know, I did it the hard way. I just built me a list of 500 probably Spanish actors, writers, athletes, musicians, and I called the list Artistas en Español. It's really just anybody in the Spanish-speaking world who has any degree of fame who tweets in Spanish. And so what I would do is sit down on, you know, Sunday, because I wasn't, you know, planning out months ahead. I was getting ready for Monday morning on Sunday night. And I'd sit down Sunday and say, well, here's my target structures. And I would spend 20 minutes just scrolling through that Twitter list, looking for tweets that were comprehensive for that level one, level two, level four, whatever classroom that also utilized the target vocabulary. And so all of a sudden, instead of just coming up with, you know, manufactured two trains leave a station, you know, irrelevant worksheet kind of sentence structures that use the target vocabulary, I'm finding authentic uses of our vocabulary that are used by Daddy Yankee. And my students are, you know, doing this bell starter, ¿qué dicen los tuiteros? What are the tweeters saying? You know, and it's an interpretive communication task. It's a bell starter. And while they're, you know, interpreting what Daddy Yankee said, we're listening to Daddy Yankee, you know, play on the room speakers. And then, you know, can talk about, hey, you know, was this song a hit? Why is it a hit? Who are the target audience of this? Are you the target audience? Do you love Daddy Yankee? And so, you know, I think tying into that whole obsession with, you know, hashtag authres, authentic resources, is just really special. And you know, if you do show notes, I can give you a link to, I have a Google Doc of, you know, getting people to share their cultural ideas. And we have now several hundred ideas real from the classroom where people have said, this is what I do to teach culture. And so I'll give you the link to the form to share with your listeners to where they can share one of their own ideas. And then from there, they can also go and steal several hundred from others.
So you have an expertise in educational technology in general and digital badges specifically. And so I was hoping you would share with us a little bit about how educational technology and world languages intersect.
Very much like culture, right? That culture is embedded in what we do as language teachers. It's not a sidebar once a chapter. And I think educational technology is very much the same way. You know, earlier in my career, it was really a hook for students, right? And at a time when all of a sudden, you know, iPod touches came out, right? And the kids at that time still had flip phones if they had a phone at all. And so the ability, I wrote a grant, I got iPod touches, and that was so cool. Right now, if you brought iPod touches into a class, kids would be like, what's the big deal? This is small and doesn't do what my phone does, right? But at the time, it was this huge hook. And so for me at the time, technology was really kind of about a shiny thing to attract students and kind of trick them into learning. And, you know, as we got more and more into it, my thinking around it evolved, and I realized I just got really lucky. It was not through intentionality. And so now, you know, I'd encourage folks to be really intentional about thinking about, you know, how is what we're doing, whether our students go on to be bilingual, biliterate, you know, and bicultural in the future or not. When we are incorporating these, you know, educational tools, we can be, you know, informing information literacy, which is a top skill that probably is already named in your state standards, or if you're a Common Core state, your Common Core standards in the 21st century skills section. Information literacy is there. And so how are we preparing students with to be familiar with the tools that they're going to be expected to use in the future. And so, you know, maybe instead of using, you know, where we were really enamored a few years ago with an Edmodo, and now, you know, stuff like Schoology or Google Classroom is a great way to communicate with our kids, or even Remind, awesome tool. You know, something that we aren't seeing a lot of in K-12, but I think we're going to be seeing in the next 18 and 36 months is teachers using Slack, you know, which is something that if our students are going to be in a white collar field, you know, in 2025, odds are if they're not using Slack, they're using something similar to Slack. And that email for internal, you know, communication in a white collar job is dying, and by 2025 probably will be dead. And so if we're using Slack in the classroom, communicating in the target language, you know, we're meeting our language goals and we're sneakily giving our students an advantage over their peers for the jobs when they're going to be able to put on a resume, hey, I'm familiar with the tools of your workplace. And so I think that that for me is one of the really powerful things is that long game of thinking ahead to whether or not the language and culture works for them. You know, in this activity, you know, they're going to get to use tools of a 21st century workplace.
That's awesome. Anything else you want to share with us today?
For folks who are interested in digital badge credentials, I think that, you know, we're beyond fad status at this point. So if you've been holding off to say, you know, I'm going to wait and see if that turns out to be a flavor of the week before I invest any time or energy in it, know that that time has come. It has passed. They are here to stay. And specific to world languages, I think we are really well positioned, especially in the K-12 space. You know, feel free to reach out on that. We do every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, hashtag Badge Chat K-12, although the name's probably just going to change to Badge Chat. Save us 3 characters on Twitter. There's just a million resources out there at this point. There was a big conference that I helped organize just a couple weeks ago called Badge Summit. You can look up hashtag Badge Summit and find a bunch of resources around that, including video of a lot of the keynotes and presentations. And, you know, in the language speaking world, you know, if you were around for the Lingua Folio days, you know, or if you are leaning on ACFL's can-do statements, you know, you are looking there at things that are amazing tools for formative and, you know, even summative assessment that we are able to just take those can-do statements. And just like with Lingua Folio, you know, you can essentially make a digital badge for that. There's a badge for that. And so take those can-do statements, level them out, you know, by proficiency level. You can lean on some of the early work that's now even 2 years old by Senorita Sexton or Senora Sexton in North Carolina, Laura Sexton. Her blog is pblinthetl.com. And, you know, she's already done a lot of that work at the novice and intermediate level of crosswalking the can-do statements to digital badge credentials. And she did it on a website called forallsystems.com where they badge. And I actually just met the founder of that company a few weeks ago at the Badge Summit. And she said, tell those teachers to reach out. I will talk to them on the phone. I will help them get set up. You can do kind of quest-based gamification of it. And I would just highly encourage people to get on that train because I think it's going places. And you know, if you're looking in the mirror saying, I'm going to be the next teacher and I want to be the best of Tennessee at my next presentation at the conference, you know, it's something that people are hungry about and they just don't know where to get started. And so what I'd tell you is, you know, don't worry about getting ready, just get started with it. And you're going to be one of the thought leaders in this space.
So if people do want to reach out to you, how should they get in touch with you?
You can always tweet at me. I'm at Senora G on Twitter. If I'm not following you, I'm sorry. Tell me, call me out and send me a message saying you're not following me. And then I'll be following you and then direct message me on Twitter. Honestly, these days, that's the best way to get a hold of me. You can also text me. I'm 7404 Senora G. It goes straight to voicemail. But if you want to just call it, you can call it 24/7. Like I said, it goes straight to voicemail. So you're not going to worry about waking me up, but that's a great way to get on my screen.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today. This was a fast paced, exciting and inspiring conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Stacy, so much for having me. And thank you everybody who's listening and taking time out of your busy schedule to just make yourself better. I hope that I've been a help of it. And just thanks to Stacy for creating the platform for it.
If you would like to comment or give feedback on the show or be a guest on the show yourself, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at WeTeachLang. You can comment on any of the episodes on our website, or you can send a text message or leave a voicemail on our Google Voice number, which is 629-888-8888. 3398. And if you leave us a voicemail, we may even play your question or comment on the air. And don't forget to tell your friends and colleagues about the show. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.